This is She Becomes, a podcast from the Junior League of Houston about unlocking the potential of women and training the next generation of women leaders.
I was working in a middle school in an under-resourced community, and I just recognized that the students in my classroom had so many risk factors for being trafficked. And so the idea that one of my students could be trafficked, and then what would happen to them after that, it just really made me want to do something.
Hi, I'm Laura Eisensee, and today on She Becomes, we're learning about the fight against human trafficking from someone who's tackling it in an unconventional way, through a coffee shop.
My name is Erica Raggett. I am the founder and executive director of A Second Cup.
And I have to ask this as a big coffee shop aficionada. I've been addicted to coffee shops since I was 16. What's your favorite drink on the menu at A Second Cup, and why?
I switch up my drinks a lot, but my favorite like cold weather drink would be our chai fritz, which is our house made chai. And it has all of those nice, like warm spices that I like to have in like the fall and the winter. And it has also espresso in it, which is a nice caffeine bump. And so that's my favorite like cool weather drink. And then when it's during the summer, I really like a decaf iced almond milk latte. Our decaf is really delicious, especially when it's paired with the almond milk. It's just really nutty, and iced is perfect for our hot summers.
Oh yes. I love a good almond milk, and it's hard to find a good decaf espresso.
Yes, that's true.
You run a very unconventional coffee shop because besides all those tasty, cozy drinks, you have a very important mission. As your slogan says, it's coffee with a cause. Tell us more about that calling.
Well, we exist for the prime purpose of fighting human trafficking in Houston. And we utilize this coffee shop model as a unique way to get the word out and to make an impact. And so we have three major things that we do to fight human trafficking. The first one is using our shop to raise awareness about the issue. We think that it's vitally important that everybody in Houston knows that human trafficking is happening here in our city and that there are things that they can do about it. We also use the shop to coordinate and collaborate and partner with other anti-trafficking groups, just to be more strategic about everything we do, and also to ensure that our customers and our supporters know of all of the different ways that they can get involved in fighting human trafficking. And the last thing that we do is we use our resources, including all of the profits that we produce from all of our sales, to go back into fighting human trafficking. And so supporting the organizations that we work with. And also we started a program in 2018 called Brazen Table, where we're training survivors in job skills in the culinary field. So all of the profits go back into all of our work fighting human trafficking.
I'm really curious to hear how this unconventional approach came up for you. I mean, why you decided to open up a coffee shop in order to fight human trafficking, as opposed to, you know, just setting up a more traditional nonprofit in that space. How did that come up?
I never really considered myself like an entrepreneur, but I always really loved coffee shops. I mean, like you mentioned, you were a coffee aficionado since like 16. And I would say the same for me. I've lived in several different places around the U.S. And one of my favorite things to do in moving to a new city is exploring all the local coffee places and finding like which ones are coziest and which ones are best for working and which ones are best for meeting friends and all those things. And I would kind of joke like, oh, I want to start a coffee shop one day, never actually believing that I would do that. It was just kind of like a pipe dream that I would dream about on days that were particularly hard at work. but then I learned about human trafficking in December of 2010, so about 10 years ago. And I just remember being so horrified, as most people are when they hear about the issue. It's just so horrible. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. And there were connections, you know, I was a teacher at that time. And so I was working in a middle school in an under-resourced community. And I just recognized that the students in my classroom had so many risk factors for being trafficked. And so the idea that one of my students could be trafficked and then what would happen to them after that, it just really made me want to do something. And so I started getting involved with different organizations and learning more and volunteering with organizations. And kind of as I kept learning things, I kept just feeling like I wanted to do more. And so one day the idea of merging those two passions came about. I remember I was like in the kitchen of my little apartment washing dishes. And I was like, what if we had this coffee shop that was a way that we, you know, had revenue to support the cause. And so, yeah, it just was kind of like this weird coincidence in my brain that those two things came together. And yeah, here we are 10 years later.
When I learned about A Second Cup and more about the mission behind the coffee counter, it reminded me of this coffee shop actually on the other side of the world. You mentioned, you know, going to coffee shops when you're traveling. This coffee shop in Pakistan, where a human rights leader, Sabine Mahmood, she created a coffee shop as a way to create more social discourse in a society that's, you know, very fraught with extremism. And, you know, so she opened this coffee shop as a place where people could come together and talk. I really see this parallel of taking a more creative approach to addressing a social problem. And I'm curious, like, what do you think it means to have a physical space to talk about a thing or to address a social problem? What comes up for you about that?
You have such a unique experience in a coffee shop. I feel like you talk to people that you may not normally talk to or may not normally come in contact with. It's a very intimate setting. Even if you're like there with your laptop open and you're working and someone across from you has their laptop open working, like, I don't know, there's just like this community that's created by being in a space like this. And I think that for issues like human trafficking, which are so intertangled and complicated, I think having that community aspect is so important. I think that, you know, we have to be thoughtful and creative and collaborative around the issue to be effective. And I think that having a coffee shop where that can happen and a space where those conversations can be occurring is something that's really valuable in the field.
Let's talk more about the specific issue of human trafficking. What do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions or misunderstandings when it comes to human trafficking, especially in a city like Houston?
I would say that the biggest misconception would be that human trafficking kind of just happens in a vacuum and that it can happen to anybody. And I will pause there and say that, yes, it can happen to anybody. However, there are factors that make some individuals more vulnerable than others. And so I think that, you know, part of fighting human trafficking means taking a step back and really evaluating what are all of the other components that are happening in a person's life that makes them more vulnerable. And so looking at things like poverty and looking at things like joblessness and homelessness and immigration and racial justice and the criminal justice system, like all of these things have to be taken into consideration when we're thinking about human trafficking, because those vulnerabilities stack up and compound and make some individuals just far more vulnerable. And so I think, yeah, we have to be thinking about human trafficking and talking to people about human trafficking in a much more holistic way.
You mentioned earlier when you kind of first learned about it 10 years ago, you thought about your students when you were a teacher at the time. Can you tell me more about what stuck with you and kind of translated to taking more action on the issue?
Yeah, so I was a middle school teacher. You know, I feel like middle school teachers are like American heroes. but I taught in a school that it was up located by Intercontinental Airport. A large number of our students were part of families who had immigrated to the U.S. the community that we were in was fairly under-resourced. So it was a food desert, and there were just not a lot of community resources. So what I recognized in my students is that because they were part of these families who had immigrated to the U.S., that makes them, you know, like somewhat more vulnerable. Because they were in these communities that were under-resourced, that made them more vulnerable. Because they were the age that they were, traffickers tend to, you know, prey upon teenagers because they have a lot of vulnerabilities. There were just all of these different things that were stacked up against them. And so kind of knowing those students and just thinking about what it would look like for them after being trafficked, you know, like they wouldn't have finished school, they wouldn't have work experience, they wouldn't have like kind of all of these connections that help you get jobs or that help you if, you know, like, God forbid you lose your job and need somewhere to land. The idea of a student who was like 13 or 14 being trafficked and then being expected to survive after that was not just heartbreaking, but also like there needs to be things to help them. There needs to be resources and programs available for survivors to be able to get back on their feet and recover.
Seems like of the different ways that you follow your cause with A Second Cup, you know, general education and raising awareness, and then specific job training for survivors. It seems to me that, like, you know, education is really at the forefront of fighting this issue. Why do you feel it's so important?
In order for people to know about and do something about human trafficking, they have to be aware of it first, and they have to understand what it looks like. So I mentioned earlier, you know, like the misconception about human trafficking happening in a vacuum. And if we're not educating people to know that human trafficking does not in fact happen in a vacuum, that it has all of these other things impacting it, then we're probably going to be going about it all the wrong way to do it, to make any impact. And so I think being very thorough in the way that we educate people about the issue is important in ensuring that we are able to be effective in fighting against it. In terms of educating individuals in the culinary and restaurant industry, as I mentioned, you know, a lot of individuals who've been trafficked have started their trafficking at a pretty young age, which means they are just missing some of those key components that they might need to be able to secure a job. And so I think that, you know, empowering or enabling them to empower themselves through education is really vital in helping them get back on their feet. And I also would say in kind of like another vein is that the field of education is so important in prevention inside of schools. You know, like teachers and administrators and school counselors are all incredibly important in supporting students before trafficking starts, but also recognizing any red flags that they might see in their students. And so I think, you know, educating people who work in the field of education about human trafficking is also incredibly important.
You've been involved in this issue now for, as you said, about a decade. How do you think the fight is going? And do you see the trend line getting better, both here in Houston and around the country? Or, I mean, have we seen things get worse with this pandemic? What does the landscape look to you right now?
You know, there's been a lot of education in the community. When I first started, I would go out and do kind of presentations, or we would set up and sell coffee and talk to people about human trafficking. When we first started, I would have to be even like defining what human trafficking is because people didn't know what it was. They hadn't heard the terminology before. Now I would say that people have at least heard the terminology of human trafficking and have some idea in their head of what it looks like. Now education looks more like unpacking more of those issues that kind of lead into human trafficking. But at least people know what it is. So I would say that we've come a long way in education. I would also say that we've come a long way in collaboration as organizations who are working against it. So we we're part of one of several collaboratives that are working to fight human trafficking. So we're a part of a Houston Rescue and Restore Coalition. And there are a number of different organizations that we're talking about how we educate about human trafficking, how we create really safe environments for clients in our care. We talk about how we can be working together to impact legislation. So I think there's a lot more conversation and a lot more collaboration in the work that we're doing. I would also say that here in Houston and Texas, we've had a lot more involvement with law enforcement and ensuring that they're educated and they kind of know what to do. And there are organizations that partner with law enforcement to go out and provide assistance to individuals who need it. So there's been a lot of movement. Statistics are really hard, so it's hard to say like how much impact we actually have made. But knowing the number of clients who've received services from different organizations, I think is very telling. In terms of where we are now with the pandemic, we don't have any statistics yet to say like how it's been impacted, but we can definitely make guesses. Because vulnerabilities really play into whether or not somebody is trafficked. When we're seeing people losing their jobs and being evicted from their homes or accruing major medical bills and just falling into situations that are very desperate because of all of these things, it means that a lot more people are going to be vulnerable. We haven't necessarily seen that play out, but I anticipate that over the next year or so, we're going to see a lot more people seeking resources because they've been in these situations where they've just compounded these vulnerabilities.
That really resonates with me about how, you know, addressing the vulnerabilities can address the bigger problem. And you mentioned statistics are hard to kind of come by, but can you paint for me the picture just very quickly? Like, what is sort of the scope of human trafficking in Houston?
We don't necessarily have the numbers for Houston specific, but there was a study done by UT a couple of years ago that estimated that there are about 300,000 people being trafficked in the state of Texas. I would say it's probably a conservative estimate, but they kind of broke that down into about 79,000 youth or minors being trafficked in the commercial sex trade, and then about 235 adults being trafficked in labor trafficking. And so that's a lot of people. And because Houston is a major metropolitan area in the state of Texas, a lot of those numbers would be coming from Houston. And I think about Houston, and Houston is such a lovely place with such amazing people. And I'm like, how can trafficking be happening here? And I think that, you know, there are a number of reasons that Houston is a major hub of trafficking. And, you know, we have I-10 is the major corridor that traffickers use to transport and move victims across the U.S. And it goes right through the middle of our city. We have people traveling here for large events and conferences and sporting events and things like that. And when people are traveling for events, trafficking tends to increase. We have a very diverse population, which is one of the most beautiful things about our city. But it also just means that any international victims or traffickers kind of just blend in. And so all of these things, and we're very close to a border, and we have an international airport and port, and all of these things kind of build up to make Houston very ripe for human trafficking. And so of those numbers that UT kind of put together, I would say that a good majority of them would be coming from Houston.
What can people do if they want to take action against this?
I am a firm believer that everyone has something to give, even if it's very small. And so there are some really great organizations doing some really great work here in Houston, both on the front end prevention side, but also on the aftercare side of providing services for individuals who've experienced trafficking. And so giving generously. So if you have the funds to give, I would say give. Find an organization that really resonates with you and give generously. Either of your time or your money or your networks, those are always good. I would say consume consciously. Labor trafficking is oftentimes kind of forgotten about because it's maybe not as jarring as sex trafficking, but percentage-wise, labor trafficking makes up much more. It's a bigger part of trafficking than sex trafficking. And so really thinking about the way that you're consuming your goods and working to understand the supply chain that goes into making all of your goods. So yeah, just being conscious. And I think that, you know, that feels very overwhelming at first for people, but I always encourage people to start small. So like start with one product, like chocolate or coffee or sugar. All of those are very, are known to have a lot of trafficking in their supply chain. And so just looking for companies or brands that utilize fair labor practices is really valuable. I would also say, you know, because there are so many things that that impact human trafficking, like if there's one that is really meaningful for you, like give there, give your time, give your money, give your resources to those organizations. Like if it's hunger, then work with the Houston Food Bank. If it is homelessness and their Star of Hope, you know, there are so many different organizations who are doing lots of different things to impact the front end before human trafficking happens that you can get involved with. And I would also say continue to learn more. There are a lot of resources out there. We work hard to ensure that we are providing educational opportunities to people on an ongoing basis. So following us, we have a calendar online that people can go and find out like what's happening on the awareness front and go to some of those events and learn more. I think the more you know, the more holistically you understand human trafficking, the more you can do about it.
Thank you so much for your time and sharing all your expertise and your journey with us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you again for thinking of us for this. It's awesome.
That was Erica Raggett, founder and executive director of A Second Cup, a nonprofit coffee shop based in Houston's Heights and dedicated to raising awareness about human trafficking. Thank you for listening. And remember, you can stay engaged with the Junior League of Houston during this time. Just visit us on Instagram, Facebook, or at jlh.org. Our music is from Ketsa and Poddington Bear. I'm Laura Eisensee, and this is She Becomes, a podcast from the Junior League of Houston. And stay safe.